If you are a high-achieving leader, one of your biggest challenges is how to manage your energy while you continue to achieve without compromising yourself in the process. Most of your training and experience has convinced you that your ability to control is at the root of your success, but what you really want to be able to do is to create and enjoy the spice of life. Today, my guest is Maren Olsak. Maren is a champion dancer, educator, and entrepreneur. She found that it was possible to bridge the gap between her spiritual life and her business. And not only is this possible, but that this integration has connected her to the limitless flow of her business. The keys to joyful integration include surrendering, presencing, and bringing together our masculine and feminine energies. Please make sure that you give yourself time to really digest this one. Before we start this conversation, I also want to let you know that starting at the end of March 2024, I will be offering the Life and Leadership Studio. In this space, we will apply the principles we talk about in this podcast to your life. Isn't it time to stop thinking about these possibilities and start exploring them with the right amount of guidance and support? Go to plenavita.coach for more information. Thank you again for listening. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Fully Alive podcast. My name is Mary Maduna Gross, and today I'm speaking with Maren Olsak. Maren, thank you so much for being here today.
It's my pleasure to be here. It's very exciting to talk to you, Mary.
Yes, this is going to be so much fun. One of the things that represents you for me is the idea of dance. And yeah. So I'm curious to hear how dance has influenced your experience and the work that you do. But before we get into that, I would really like you to share a little bit with the listeners about who you are. What is your experience that has brought you to this work that you're doing now?
Yeah, so it's so interesting, our individual journeys, isn't it?
Like, it is.
We all have our journeys, and I guess that kind of speaks to both the work that I'm doing now and also where I've been over my lifetime. I'm working with people, really businesses, on life mission, like why we're here on the planet. And it's so important to where we are right now that people start to wake up to that. And my journey actually started before I was 10, my mom had me in self-development workshops. And so I was like from a very early age in the woods of that personal development stuff. And by the time I was a teenager, I was in beyond self-development work into the spiritual side of things. And I was raised Catholic, and I used to call myself a recovering Catholic.
I used the word recovered.
Yeah. Sure. And it's interesting, as I've gotten older, I see the value in all of that. And that's the journey. Like I said, the journey, it wasn't about that Catholicism was bad, wrong, or evil. It just wasn't right for me where I was, because I was meant to explore more and see a larger context. One of my coaches uses transcend and include rather than making it right or wrong. What I found for myself in all of it, and this is getting to where you talked about dance, one of the things that dance helped me do, I invested about 25, 30 years of my life in couples dancing, partnership dancing, from swing to country to ballroom, very in-depth, and got to the top levels of three different disciplines. And what I found is, for me, with that background of personal development and spirituality and looking to be inclusive of things, dance really taught me how to be a partner.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people, it's like, oh, I know how to be a partner, right? I'm in a marriage, I'm in a relationship, I have teams, I have this. And there's so much more to it. And it's this joyful and also sometimes challenging road that we travel. What I loved about the dance is that in order to partner well with somebody, you have to completely surrender while also being 100% present. And you're like, wow. What the heck is that?
That sounds like some twisting.
Right? And often, like, we hear the word surrender and we think give up. give over. I'm just not going to be me. I'm going to give it over. And that's where the presence comes in. Because I have to be 100% in my body, present to me. And I have to surrender that control piece, not meaning that somebody else is controlling me, meaning that I'm choosing to become one with that person in that moment to create something larger than either of us could create separately.
Wow. What a very tangible metaphor.
It is. And I always say I'm a slow learner, so it took me 30 years to get it, but... And I think it was really meant that I was meant to go really deeply into that. It's interesting because we can get something at a surface level very quickly. And mastery is a much deeper, like it's a lifetime. It's not, I spend 2 years and I'm a master at something. There's the 10,000 hours rule. And then there's even more than that to truly change a world. So that's where, for me, dancing is essential to who I am. And not because I dance, it's because of who it allowed me to become and what I'm taking forward with me as I work with businesses and people. Because for me, it is dancing with life.
Yeah.
Meaning that taking that analogy that we just used of completely surrendering, how do we be fully in life and completely surrendered to it?
Exactly. That, I think, is the central question.
And that's the dance.
And why is that good for business?
Oh, my gosh.
Right? Because I think that if we're just talking in the world of personal development, and that's one thing. But then how does this translate into business, and why? That sounds pretty messy. And business is challenging enough. Why would I want to engage in that challenge in the context of business?
That's such a great question. And I'm going to turn to the pandemic as a great example of why, because it threw us all off guard, right? We weren't ready for that.
No.
And being fully present and in the dance with life, you would be present to incoming information like that. So going back to my example of dancing with a partner, when you're that in sync with your partner, it's almost what's coming. Without trying to figure it out, I can't anticipate what my partner is about to lead me into. I can be present to where the information flows are going and move with them.
Right.
That takes a lot of skill. It takes some practice.
Absolutely.
And that, as a business leader, are you in tune with your business so much so that you could move with it? As B, the next thing to be in tune with is the industry that you're in, and then C, the larger world, right? Life itself.
Right.
And that's three levels of awareness that we need to bring to the table and be in a regular practice with to be able to move with those information flows and feel where they're like. One of the things that's very popular right now, and for good reason, is this presencing the future, right? The incoming, the future. Science is catching up to mysticism. In that the science is starting to realize that the future actually creates the past, which is a huge, makes your mind go, what?
Sure. Yeah. Especially our very logical, sequential minds.
Yes. Yeah. Very much. And even if that weren't true, if we just were looking at from the perspective of what if you knew that something like a pandemic was coming, or you might not know what was coming, you just knew. You were so in tune with life that you knew that you needed to transition or shift your business in this direction or that direction, and it made no logical sense. So if, say, for example, the pandemic was coming and you thought, I need to sell my business. You're like, why? Why on earth? What? It's great. It's booming. It's going great. What the heck? And you had these intuitions and you were so in tune with life that you knew this is what I need to do next. And you sidestepped something that wiped out so many people.
Right.
There's so much value to that, to being in tune with where you need to be, where spirit's calling you. What are the lessons and the next steps for you? And from a, like you said, from a personal development standpoint, it's, oh, that would be really nice. And from a business perspective, it's essential.
Right.
Like, it's critical.
One of the things that was coming up for me as you were describing that sense of intuition and knowing, even if you don't know exactly what the conditions are, right, or what is coming, you just know something's coming. I forget where I saw this, and I think it's heart math, but I could be wrong. But they were doing studies where they had people wired up, and they would show them images that were all kinds of emotions, right? From this feels nice and sweet to this is absolutely horrifying. And through the technology that they had, they were able to discover that the unconscious mind was able to predict the next picture that was coming up 5 seconds before it came up.
Mm. That's powerful.
I think that is too, because I am a person that comes from that logical, sequential, like I want to know it. I want to know what the facts are, right? I want to deal with what is real. And what this tells me is that part of my brain would never tune into that, right? You can't be a part of this random picture experience and expect that logically or my mental mind is going to be able to predict what's coming next.
Yeah, you can't figure it out.
You can't, but my body knows. We have a way of knowing that we don't really know how to even tap into. And I think this is just an example of what that power is.
It really is. And I'm going to make a distinction between intuition and knowing.
Okay.
In that intuition technically comes from our past. It's what our, like you said, our bodies know it. When you're in a, like your subconscious mind takes in all everything, right? Yeah. All, if I walk into a room, my subconscious mind feels, hears, sees, senses, tastes, smells, and all of that is a part of me now. So my unconscious mind has access to every single piece of that. My conscious mind has access, like they say that the conscious mind can handle the subconscious mind takes in about 11 billion bytes per second. And the conscious mind can handle like a million of that, even not even, I think it's like several thousand of that. Anyway, it's some really small amount, right?
Sure.
But we have something called the reticular activating system, which actually says that's not important, that's not important, that's not important, and filters all of that stuff out. So our intuition taps into that deeper knowing that's registered everything.
Right.
When we tap into the spiritual side of us, into the deeper knowing, we actually go past stuff that our own bodies, our own experience, our own past, what we've already experienced, we can tap into knowing that we've never actually experienced. So that is really the difference between our intuition, which is amazing and very powerful, and a deeper way of knowing, which we actually have access to also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what comes into my mind when I hear you say that is access. How do we do that? But I wonder, does that access have something to do with what you were saying about surrender a few minutes ago?
It does. And it is Otto Scharmer, who is part of the Presencing Institute, has a wonderful 4 levels of listening. And on that 4th level of listening, it's presence. It's that presencing practice. And most spiritual, I would say probably every spiritual, and I don't know because I haven't studied every spiritual tradition, have some way of, there's 2 levels that I think of. One of them is quieting the mind enough to be able to focus. And there's all kinds of meditations and practices that allow us to do that, to go like every time we hear the mind, shut it up. Every time we hear the mind, And then the next level of that is going even beyond that to the awareness. So one of most, I think many people, maybe not, many people in my world, and I know that I live in my own little world, right? One of the meditations that is out there in multiple traditions is becoming aware of your awareness. So I tell you to think of something blue, and you think of something blue. And I ask you, inside of you, what part of you told you to think of something blue? Something, okay. Right? Something is orchestrating that.
Yeah.
What's that awareness? Who is the awareness behind the awareness? Mm-hmm. Right? Now we're starting to get into that for Ardha Sharma's fourth level of listening. And now we're starting to get into that's where we find the knowing. Is that awareness, the greater awareness. And those are the practices that one of the things you said was where my mind goes is, okay, how do you do that? And we all want that, right? Because we're like, I want right. that level of, I do want to know what's coming. I want to protect my business. I want to be able to know of something. So how do we go about that? And there are multiple ways of doing that. One of the ways that I help people to do that is we work with the why you're here. Because if you can tune into at a very deep level, not take a week, you know, more, and I love the weekend workshops where you're like, okay, find your purpose. Right. And you walk away like it's a flag plastered, like out a star on my forehead. There's my purpose. What's the ongoing conversation with that purpose? Mm-hmm. And keep taking it deeper and deeper. So that purpose is actually what is divining your life. It's really opening doors for you and taking you to the next place and protecting you. There's a Sufi mystic that has a saying that says the safest place for you to be, you could be in the middle of a tornado. And if it is your life mission to be there, it is the safest place you could be.
I love you bringing up this concept of safety, because when I think about surrendering, I think about surrendering all of the beliefs and my knowledge and everything that makes me right. Up until this moment, right? Am I willing to surrender all of that to be in the presence, to be present, to learn what else is possible?
Wow, that's a great question. And there, so one of my teachers has a way of talking, which kind of makes me nuts. And so I might make you nuts in a moment. Okay. It's not necessary to give it all up unless it is.
Huh. That's the part that always makes me nuts. I'm like, what if it is? What if it is?
Okay, because that's where my mind goes, is that. And there's a saying amongst the mystics that says, the cost of waking up is nothing less than everything. Which feels intimidating, doesn't it?
Sure does.
And in my mind, that goes along with another mystical saying that says, before awakening, chop wood, carry water. After awakening, chop wood, carry water. Which tells you actually nothing's changed, except that everything has changed because of who I am has changed. So that the cost of is nothing less than everything. We're talking about our egos, of our sense of ourselves. Not that your life has to be demolished, not that the outer world has to change at all. And it may. Unless it has to. Because sometimes as we become more conscious, the things that we've chosen from our unconscious selves doesn't work for us anymore.
Exactly.
And sometimes it does. It just looks really different from what it looked like before. So it's the annihilation of the ego, not of the life. which is also very intimidating. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. For sure it is. What was coming up for me as you were describing that, again, this the letting go of the ego and this idea of surrender. I lost my train of thought. I was hoping it was going to come back.
One of the things that, like, before we started recording, you were talking about, why is this important on our planet right now, while we're in the midst of this, what has been a very masculine way of being? And when I say masculine way of being, I'm not saying that it is about men, because men and women both have masculine and feminine in us. And I think a lot of us women, I heard you talking about it earlier, I'm very linear, I'm logical, I'm very this, I'm high rational achiever. That's, we've been trained in a very masculine way. Hmm. And the feminine is the surrender piece. And I know when I was, before I started dancing, this I think was one of the main reasons that I needed to invest so much time in the dance community and in dancing, is because before I started dancing, surrender to me was like, oh, hell no.
Of course.
Absolutely not. I am a strong woman. I can do it. I am like, I'm just as good as you, and all of that. Fierce
ladder, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I learned what it meant to be fierce in surrender. Mm-hmm. That there's a feminine fierceness as well. I think any protective mother understands that. Mm-hmm. So the native peoples, and I'm not sure, I may be Cherokee, I don't know. I think I may be wrong about that. I do know it's the native peoples. Lynn Twist tells a beautiful story about the bird of humanity that came from the native peoples. And she said that, imagine a bird and it's got one wing that is tucked under. And the other wing is working so hard, and it's flapping and it's flapping and it's working, and it's getting exhausted because it's working so hard. And the bird is flying in circles because it only has one wing that can move. That's what we've been doing as a society. That's our bird with one wing. That's the masculine side, and it's been overworked. Oh, and wow. Right now, what's happening is that the feminist side is starting to unfurl and starting to, like, oh, look at that. This is important too. It's not to diminish. We don't want to cut the other wing off. We're not about diminishing. And I see that happens a lot when we go into the right, wrong, good, bad, right? It's the binary. We need both.
Exactly.
And so the prophecy is that as that wing unfurls, the feminine wing, and we start to embody it and embrace it, now you have the bird of humanity, who is flying and soaring because both wings are working and strong, and one isn't overworked and one being ignored. Isn't that beautiful?
That is an amazing story. And it is aligned with what I couldn't think of a few minutes ago. So that's why I probably had this gap, right? It was like, no, there's more to come.
Exactly.
Hold Mary. So part of my story is that I got pushed out of my first career with a conversation from my superintendent that basically said, you're doing all the right things. If I were in your shoes, I'd be doing exactly what you're doing. But what you're doing is not working. So you have to figure this out or you have to go. Mm-hmm. So for me, that doing piece is that very masculine, right? Mm-hmm. I had figured it out. I did know all of that, but that's not enough. And he wasn't wrong. I wasn't getting the right results, and I didn't know why. And so what I do, I would try to be more right, try to be righter, and try to do more and push through more. Leads to burnout.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love that bird of humanity metaphor, because I can see where that masculine side of doing push harder, flap harder, but it's never going to compensate for that feminine side.
Right.
And that feminine side, I never gave any attention to at all. I don't need that at work. If I want to, I can deal with that at home. But wow, I love that metaphor of we need both.
We do. And I love that you brought that up, your story, because it's so powerful. That's what we're taught to do.
Yes.
We're taught to be logical and linear. And that's like the apex of what we'll get to is this rational being. And spiritually speaking, that's halfway through our evolution. Even though we look at it as like the peak, we reached the mountaintop. And what you found is that it's frustrating and it leads to burnout and it leads to anxiety and it leads to all of these things that we're experiencing right now on our planet.
Exactly.
And so then we get grumpy about it and we fight with each other and right. And right. Really, it's about an up leveling. And what I love that you did with your story is instead of shaming or blaming yourself or your boss, or which is the lower version of the story, you kept looking for what's the higher version? Why did this happen? And there we're back to our why again, right?
Exactly.
And that's the thing is like, how do we up level? It's telling a better story, a different story about what's happened to us, because what's happened to us is just an event. The story we tell ourselves about that event. So earlier I mentioned that the future creates the past.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a great, very practical example of that. You had an experience with your boss. And at the time, the story you told yourself was probably not the same story you're telling yourself now.
100%.
Okay. Now, when you look back at that's a very different event, isn't it?
It is.
So your future self now created a different event in your past just based on the story that you're telling yourself. So imagine, you're seeing it, right? Imagine if you keep up-leveling that story and finding, okay, that's awesome. So why did I choose that in that moment? Because I'm here on this planet for a reason. And that knowing self, my future self, chose that exact thing for a reason. And if I stay present to it, now I'm being pulled forward by my life mission into the highest version of myself and why I'm here and what I'm called to do and who that's asking me to be.
I love this. So I'm taking the invitation to look back on this
level
again. Yes, yes. And what I can see now, because I've told the story, of course, a bazillion times, but the next part of the story is when I went back to my desk after this conversation, I really didn't get into the blaming and all of that. And not by design, by any means, but I sat down and I said, okay, Mary, how are you contributing to what is actually happening in this organization? I had not asked myself that at any point along my journey up until that point. And I think that was the question that then shifted everything for me. Because instead of saying that so-and-so needs to change or this needs to change, I stopped saying something outside of me needs to change. What is it that I can do to change this? I had no idea what that meant at the time.
Right.
But I think this also goes to the intuition or the knowing, because I didn't set out to have this experience. But when I asked myself, how are you contributing? The Johari window came up as an answer. And I don't get answers. I'm the person that can watch a movie. And then next week, if you say, hey, have you seen this movie? I'll be like, no, I've never heard of that before. I don't retain that kind of information. And so when I asked this question in a very specific framework from one of my counseling courses came up, the Johari window. I thought that got my attention. That never happens. And the Johari window basically says there's things about you that you know and everybody else does too. And that there are things about you that you don't know and no one else does either. And so I was in this space of having this conversation with my higher self or my intuition or this knowing, right? For the first time, because now I'm asking about me and not how everybody else needs to change. I'm asking about how I need to change. And later, again, another one of these revising the past based on the present is I was literally hired to come in and change systems, right? So what did I see myself as? I saw myself as the fixer. I'm coming in. I have the answers. I'm going to fix you. Now, in my mind, I'm fixing systems, not people. but it doesn't translate that way. And so people felt like I was trying to fix them or change them or whatever. And so, of course, they resist. This all of a sudden, this knowing, and now I can take this experience that was super painful at the time. But even that day, I literally, when I got to this unknown quadrant piece and the knowing or the doing, like I was doing the right things, and yet there's this unknown quadrant. It, to me, it was just obvious that whatever was holding me back had to be in this unknown quadrant. And I decided that afternoon that I would figure this out. It wasn't going to be to keep my job. I resigned probably within the next week, because that afternoon I said, you know what? I can't be the only leader that has fallen into this trap of just knowing all you have to do is know to be a good leader into what, how does this unknown quadrant fit into the equation? And so I decided then I wanted to be the coach that I wish that I'd had.
That's so amazing.
Here we are. Yeah.
Yeah. So that when we step into that and we're willing to listen. So I think a lot of people, they hear that moment and then they dismiss it because it's scary. You resigned. You stepped away from what you knew and you dove into the unknown.
I did.
And that is, that's a very, we're not trained to do that in this world. And I love that you're here helping people to do that, because that's what I hear is, it's like, how do we, and how do we start even into a conversation with the unknown? And that is the surrender. That is the dancing with life. That is, and it does have to start with a question. There's, it's not, I think that we're, as a culture, we love things that like have quests, right? We're very intrigued by them. And I think that the reason is because we are meant to, we're here on our own quests. Our life mission is, that's what we're questing. We're like, we're pulling out, we're like little detectives in our lives, pulling out this, oh, what does that mean? Oh, what does this mean? And we've gotten distracted. There's another Sufi mystic, actually, it might have been Rumi, who said that in regards to our life mission, it's as if a king has sent us to a foreign land to do one thing. And we've done 10,000 other things. It's as if we've done nothing. And we get so distracted. Shiny object, shiny object. Oh, this person makes this much money. I should make that much money. This should be done. I need this. I need a boat. I need a house. I need a this. I write all of the stuff. And I'm not saying it's not important. It just is, what's the why behind it? Yeah. Is it serving? So you were in that rat race of, I need to be a better manager. I need to be a better this. I need to be a better leader. I need to get all this knowing. And you got stopped and you listened when you got stopped.
Finally, it took me a long time.
You're not the only one. It might have been Snoopy. I don't know. There's some great mystic like Snoopy who said that we're meant to, like, the first half of our lives, we get all the stuff and we're chasing after it. We internalize all this stuff. And the second half of our lives, we learn to let it go.
Exactly.
So. Yeah. Yeah, we are. It's meant to take a while, because you need to have all of that so that you can go through it and sort for the gold, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And even when I hear myself say it took a while, I often ask myself, am I judging myself?
Right?
And I know early on, I absolutely was. Like, I should have been here sooner. I should have figured this out earlier.
Yeah.
And there's some more shoulds and shouldn'ts. Again, the Q word, if that word just means that it's not me.
My business partner, Stephanie, calls them the shoulda, woulda, coulda, ought to's.
Yes. Yeah. And they're toxic.
Yes.
They're toxic. So the story that I tell myself now is, everything has happened exactly the way it needed to happen. I needed to have that experience. If I didn't have that experience and that story, it would be a lot harder for me to do the work that I'm doing.
Yeah. Like,
not only for my clients to understand what I'm doing, but for me to even articulate what I'm doing. I had to go through that. And experience that treadmill of pushing through and pushing through and compromising my health, compromising my relationships, compromising my own sense of well-being. So that could really come from that experience of that really sucked.
I don't want to do that anymore.
I didn't just read about it in the book and say, no, that didn't sound like a good story. I lived it. I know it.
Yeah.
And I also know that at any moment, we can have that conversation with ourselves and say, how am I contributing to this experience right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And it does create a shift. The biggest thing that needs to happen in order to create a shift is we need space.
Yes.
And when you asked that question, how am I contributing? You made space for an answer. And not that the answer is going to come right away. It just puts us on that quest path. Mm-hmm. And so we need to make that space and open that up for us to actually to go deeper, to get to why? How am I contributing to this? You won't ever get an answer until you ask the question, right? You opened a door and it's like you open that door. And I think a lot of us, till we open the door and we go, and then we try and shut it again.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I wrote long that. But yeah, it's so rich when we finally walk through it.
Yeah. So that idea, and I don't know even know where it what triggered this in me, but this has been an idea of this whole week of it's never too late.
Never.
No.
Never.
Took me 18 years. I would still make the shift. It would took me 25 years, right? But just, and I think one of the reasons why I do this podcast is hoping that those that are earlier in that experience of pushing through, they at least have an indicator, a marker that says, you know, you do have a choice here. Because up until then, I don't think I knew that I had a choice. I just, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is how you get to be a leader. This is how you become what I wanted to become. And so I want people to know that there's always a choice.
It gets as bad as we need it to be.
Amen.
And we all have experienced that with something in our lives, whether it's, you know what, I'm fed up with eating the junk food and feeling like fat or stuck or like having the emotional highs and lows from the sugar or whatever. And you go through a period of however many months where you're like, oh, I don't want this. And then you eat something else. Oh, I don't want this. And then it gets to be where it's, I'm done.
Yeah.
So it got as bad as I needed it to be for me to finally say, I'm done. And that's not just in our personal lives.
Correct.
We think about this work-life balance thing, and life is life. So we show up at our jobs, and we show up in our marriage, and we show up at our homes, and we show up like we go with us everywhere.
Right, right.
So every place that you go, there's going to be something where it's going to get as bad as you need it to be until you make a change. And then it's going to be like, oh, that's what I was looking for.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's never too late. And it's not a one and done. I guess that's the other thing is there will be continual doors. And to give maybe hope is it doesn't have to get horrible. So one of the journeys that I was on early in my life was the drama trauma train, right? And I was waking up through drama and trauma. And then I met a teacher, Daniel Goodenough, who was like, it doesn't have to be like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I didn't know I didn't have to be like that. I can wake up through joy and abundance. And he's like, yeah, you can. And that, coming back around, when you step into your life mission and you're in that conversation, that's one of the opportunities of that, is it doesn't have to be through drama and trauma. So you can step out of it gets as bad as you need it to be, because it can get less and less bad. It can get more and more good. There is a path to transformation that is through beauty and joy and light. So there's hope.
Absolutely. There is always hope. And again, that's coming up for me a lot. And maybe this is something I need to hear at some point. So maybe that's why it's coming up, is that it's never too late. And I hope that listeners who have been struggling or are struggling, yeah, give themselves permission to take that pause.
Yeah. Open the door.
Yeah.
Peek around the corner. Take a deep breath. Open some space.
It's going to be okay.
It is.
Sure.
And I would highly recommend to talk to somebody. Somebody like you, a coach, or somebody that can hold the... One of the blessings that I had was meeting Daniel Goodenough, because he's been my coach for 30 years. And he has held space for me so many times when I wasn't able to do it for myself. And I've had a lot of people who have been able to do that for me. And I found that oftentimes I don't want to burden a friend or this. And yeah, you know what? I pay for somebody to listen to me and hold space for me. And it is worth every penny I spend doing it.
And a question came up for me as you were describing holding space. How do you define that? So sometimes I can feel that idea of holding space can feel abstract, nebulous. I don't know what this is. How would you describe it?
When we're not filling every nook and cranny. So when we think about our mind chatter, mm-hmm, it's endless. What do we call them? Woulda, coulda, shoulda, autos. So meditation helps us to focus our mind, which starts to create some space. A coach, when we can't do that for ourselves, a coach can do that for us by helping to clear some of that out. So they can do it on multiple levels. One of them is this verbal, logical level of I can help to clear some of that out, right? There's also, we become denser and denser in our beings until we're finally like actual solidness, solid beings, right? So they say that an issue shows up in your body, that's the last time place it will show up. So when we start to feel physical illness, that's the last symptom. It was in the field first, and then it was in our thoughts, and then it was in our emotions, and then it becomes a physical thing.
Right.
So coaches skilled in working with multiple levels can hold space on not just the physical level, but also the mental, the emotional, the spiritual, and like field level. So there's all kinds of dimensions to that, mm-hmm, that may not be easily explained.
Yeah. One of the ways that I feel space, whether I'm holding it for someone else or someone is holding it for me, the first word that comes up is non-judgment. Non-judgment of whatever the central issue seems to be, and non-judgment of whatever the story and emotional rate response is.
Yeah.
You'd said something about, I don't want to burden a friend or whatever. I think that we're uncomfortable seeing someone else uncomfortable, that rather than holding space for them, we try to fix it for them or tell them it's going to be okay. In some way, we're trying to fix it. But to me, holding that space says, first of all, there's nothing that really needs to be fixed. This just needs to be experienced.
I love that. Exactly.
And I'm going to hold this space for you so that you feel safe while you experience this painful emotion. And you'll come out of it. I know you will.
Yeah.
No one has not come out of it yet. And myself included, I was just saying in another podcast, get down on the floor kind of thing. Like it can get to that level. But when there's someone holding space for us, I think it's that safety net of knowing I'm not going to get washed away with these emotions.
That was really well stated. I also think that it's a holding of potential.
Yes.
Like somebody who sees something in me that I don't yet see in myself. And it stems from that non-judgment that you said of I'm judging myself as not good enough, or that I did this, or that I blah, blah, blah. And this other person is, yeah, whatever. I'm not judging. You're on a path. And here's what I It's not even, here's what I see. It's just holding that, oh, they see me as bigger than that. Mm-hmm. I'm bigger than that. Yeah.
Oh, my grandmother was that person for me. Mm-hmm. She was the one who could see things in me that I could never see in myself.
Mm-hmm. It's so essential we have somebody like that in our lives.
Yeah, it is. Maren, this is absolutely delightful.
It has been. Thank
you for this conversation.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a joy.
Do you sense that there's been any loops that we've left unclosed?
I don't sense that. Do you?
I don't. I feel complete.
Yeah.
This has been absolutely delightful. Where can people, the listeners, learn more about you and connect with you?
Yeah. So my first name is Maren, M-A-R-E-N. And my website is marindance.com. It's also my last name. You can get there the same way, but it's easier to say marindance.com. So you can reach me there. We also have a podcast called The Soulful Leader Podcast, and you can find that on all the Audible and iTunes and or whatever all the podcast channels are. It's available everywhere. And you can visit our website, thesoulfulleaderpodcast.com.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mary.